Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Is it just me or has TV gotten really complicated? I'm either endlessly searching for my favorite shows or subscribing to a dozen different streaming services to make sure I can watch everything I love. And I'm not even saving that much money compared to my old cable bill. Thankfully, Philo has changed all that for me. One service, all the stuff I need. Philo's got current seasons of the shows I can't miss live on networks like Paramount, A&E, MTV, Discovery, and TLC. Classics like The Office, Martin, and Friends that I never get sick of, and all of the incredible originals on AMC Plus, from Mad Men to Orphan Black. Don't forget their library of more than 75,000 movies and shows, all of which I can save and re-watch anytime for a whole year. Never miss a minute of shows like Gypsy Rose, Life After Lockup on Lifetime, Yellowstone, or Fatal Attraction. Best of all, with Philo, you get all this for just $28 a month. No contracts, no hassles. Just one subscription and a world of entertainment. So go to philo.tv and check it out for a free 7-day trial. That's philo.tv to start watching.
Ben Volen is the senior NFL writer at the Boston Globe. He joins us courtesy of our BetQL guest hotline. You can follow Ben on X on Twitter, at Ben, V-O-L-I-N. We welcome Ben back to the show. Thanks, Ben. Appreciate it. I'm just curious as to what your reaction was to one of the wilder games of the year. I mean, it's the Jameis Winston experience on full display last night, but what did you think of him, and what do you think the opportunity for him moving forward is?
I think the word you just said is a good one. I think there's an opportunity now for Jameis Winston to reclaim a starting job with the Cleveland Browns moving forward. Now they are in a real sticky situation with Deshaun Watson, because they owe him it's not only the salary cap, but they owe him cold hard cash the next 2 years, $46 million guaranteed each of the next 2 years. And at this point, there's no team that's going to be willing to take, you know, any part of that contract. So the Browns might have to just swallow it and find a way to release him, or just keep Watson as a backup and have Jameis as a starter. But I do think the Browns are going to be looking for a quarterback. And Jameis, you know, it's the roller coaster, as you said. I mean, the two pick sixes, it's a lot of good, but also a lot of head-shaking decisions. And, you know, the Browns would probably be in a better place right now in the standings if they had gone with Jameis earlier this year. I think he's clearly a better choice than Deshaun Watson. And it looked for a little bit like Jameis maybe had corralled his wild streak and his interceptions under Kevin Stefanski, then, unfortunately, kind of reared their heads last night. But I do think there's a chance there to be the quarterback moving forward, because even with Deshaun Watson's contract, I just don't think the Browns are going to be running it back with him next year. So Jameis now has five more games to show his stuff. And hopefully for his sake, it's more 400-yard games and fewer interceptions.
You know, I'm trying to sit here and rack my brain to come up with a former player at that position that was as prolific at keeping both teams in the game at the same time as much as Jameis Winston's done over the years when he's had the opportunity to start. And I can't really come up with a comp. Like, there was a time, I mean, this guy's a Hall of Fame quarterback, understood, but Favre could do that on occasion, you know, during his career with the number of picks he threw. I mean, if you want to go way back when throwing picks and making mistakes wasn't even a big deal for quarterbacks, Namath did it, but obviously he was a Hall of Famer. Can you think of a comp for Jameis Winston more recently?
It's a great question because, you know, as you said, the NFL is a much safer league now. I think this year it's the least amount of interceptions at this point in the season in NFL history, and passes are getting shorter and shorter, and really kind of replicating the run game in many cases. So in recent memory, there's no one like Jameis. And even in NFL history, I mean, his season in 2019 where he had the 30 interceptions, I'm pretty sure that's the NFL record. No one, even back in the Joe Namath days, was throwing that many picks.
Right.
Usually you don't have the talent to keep playing, to stay in the lineup when you throw that many interceptions. I mean, yeah, like, who are the old gunslingers? Favre was the guy that immediately kind of came to mind. You know, Matthew Stafford was kind of like that with the Lions.
I'm a big Philip Rivers guy. Rivers could certainly keep both teams in the game at the same time.
Yeah. You know, Stafford, though, like, you know, he was someone who threw a ton of picks. But then he had Calvin Johnson, and they were kind of going up and down the field. So they weren't winning a lot of games, but it felt like there was a lot of action in those games. But, yeah, Jameis is one of one. There's really no one quite like him, both from a performance standpoint and his personality. So him back in the league is, I think, just a tremendous addition for the NFL.
Let's talk about the team that you're closest to. We've got, you know, a rookie quarterback playing, I think, offensive rookie of the year football. I think his game on Sunday kind of probably pushed those odds back into his favor, even though Bo Nix played pretty well last night. But so tell us how Drake May's played for the Patriots.
Drake May has been the one reason to tune in to the Patriots games these last 2 months. I mean, they have, you know, arguably the worst roster in the NFL. The coaching staff looks pretty overmatched with Jerod Mayo in his first year. And, you know, the offensive line is historically bad, and they don't have wide receivers. And every week you're watching the game, and it's like, who are these guys? It's just a very anonymous type of team. But Drake May has been such a breath of fresh air, been so much better than anyone anticipated. He didn't have he didn't look great in training camp. He started off kind of slow, and there was nothing in those preseason games that was like, wow, Drake May. And, you know, everyone was on board with him sitting for the first however many games behind Jacoby Brissett. They made the move when they had to, not because Drake May was, like, wowing in practice, but they were scoring 10 points a game with Jacoby Brissett. And after five games, it's like, enough is enough. And there were no expectations for Drake May. You know, everything you heard about him coming out was his footwork was raw, and you know, it's going to take him some time. He's a project, and that stuff is certainly true. But Drake is a gamer, and I've been very impressed. And I'm not someone who goes gaga over a lot of rookie quarterbacks. And Drake, with no help around him, has been a playmaker. The game has not been too big for him. He sees the field very clearly, makes good reads. His accuracy and footwork have been fine by all accounts. He's a gamer with his legs. He makes a lot of big runs,
right,
kind of scampering around. And he's made it fun. The Patriots are now scoring 7 points more per game with Drake May in the lineup than Jacoby Brissett. He still throws too many picks. There are some rookie mistakes every game. But considering how little help Drake May has around him, he's been fantastic. And the Patriots, they feel good about him moving forward. Now they just have to build out the roster around Drake May.
The OC, and his name's escaping me right now, but he was with Brissett in Cleveland. Who's the OC?
Alex Van Pelt.
Are they running a lot of, you know, for the lack of a better description, college-style zone read option-style plays with him?
Not too many, no. It's really it's a similar offense that they're running in Cleveland because under Kevin Stefanski, because that's where Alex Van Pelt was the last four years. And really, it's Green Bay Packers stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of the offensive coaches were, you know, it's Alex Van Pelt, Ben McAdoo, a couple other guys. They all come from the Packers 10 years ago, where they were with Aaron Rodgers under Mike McCarthy. So it's a lot of that stuff. One thing that's been surprising, I thought we'd see a lot more play action, and the Patriots are one of the lowest play action calling teams in the league. And you would think, A, coming from the Packers system, and B, with a rookie quarterback and an offense that doesn't have great talent at wide receiver, you'd think they'd utilize more play action and bootlegs and things like that. But Alex Van Pelt, you know, I don't know if he's the best coach for this situation. This is the first time he's ever been a play caller and in charge of his own offense. But Drake May is playing well, so you got to give Van Pelt some credit for that. And last week, the offense against the Colts gained 422 yards.
Wow.
They ran for over 200. They utilized some trick plays, like they got creative. So Van Pelt is doing something. It's Jerod Mayo and the Patriots defense that's been the biggest disappointment. They're just letting teams run all over them. The Colts finished off that game with a 19-play drive for 80 yards. Anthony Richardson went 2-for-2 on third down and 3-for-3 on fourth down. So everyone was counting on the Patriots defense keeping this team competitive this year. They were certainly a very competitive unit under Bill Belichick. But you take Belichick out of the equation, and the Patriots defense has really fallen apart this year.
I had no idea that that was a 19-play drive. Our game was long, and your game was kind of long, so I caught it on my other screen on Red Zone, the fourth down touchdown pass, and then him with his 260-pound, you know, the dude is just a freak athletically, Richardson, you know, sort of going quarterback counter into the end zone for the two-point conversion. By the way, for people listening, Antonio Gibson's played well, had a really good game for the Patriots on Sunday. I'm looking at it right now, 7 carries, 62 yards, and a touchdown. I always liked Gibson here.
The narrative this week in Boston is, why didn't they use him more? He was the hot hand. And they had some drives that went nowhere at the end when they needed some points, and he was standing on the sideline. The Patriots played the Commanders last year, and Gibson kind of tore them up. And I think that game alone is why the Patriots ended up signing him. And yeah, he's been a nice kind of 1-2 punch with Ramondre Stevenson this year.
All right, let's talk rest of the league, and let's start here. You cover the league. What's your impression of Washington and the season Jaden Daniels has had?
I mean, the first half, unbelievable. You know, talk about the surprise story of the year. So many props deserved for Dan Quinn, for Jaden Daniels, for Cliff Kingsbury. The efficiency numbers of that offense were insane. I mean, they were scoring on 60% of their drives, which would have been, you know, which would be an NFL record. And, you know, there was only like two other teams over 50%. So their efficiency the first half of the season was unbelievable. Obviously, that's come down the last few weeks. You worry that Jaden Daniels has, you know, to use the old cliche, hit a little bit of the rookie wall. He's started 14 games, you know, in college. Like, he's had long seasons, but you always have multiple bye weeks. You got 3 weeks before your bowl game, that kind of thing. He's not used to starting 13 games in a row. So it certainly seems to be hitting a wall, and I think the Commanders are kind of regressing to where they should be, kind of middle of the pack a little bit, you know, 500 team, maybe a little bit better. They're probably ahead of schedule with the way that they started out this year. But you've got to love Jaden Daniels, everything about his game, his leadership. Cliff Kingsbury must be in heaven right now after dealing with Kyler Murray and his refusal to watch film and study the playbook, and now he's got Jaden Daniels, who seems to have, you know, just great maturity and leadership. So it's a very good thing they've got building there in Washington. If they get into the playoffs, that's good experience, but really they're still building, and I expect them to have a big offseason, obviously, as they look to put some talent around Jaden Daniels. But they hit a home run, and I guarantee you there are a lot of people in Chicago being like, oh, why don't we draft this guy?
Yeah, although Caleb clearly, you know, still has shown a lot here with Thomas Brown as the play clock caller. I mean, it takes, you know, I mean, you're watching last night Bo Nix. You're seeing, you know, You're seeing in Carolina, you're seeing that situation get a little bit better with Bryce Young. It just takes time, right? I mean, these guys, some of them don't really start to develop until they're 27 or 28 years old. We've seen it with Geno Smith in recent years. We may be seeing it with Sam Darnold right now.
Yeah, it's true. At the same time, when you're a franchise like Washington and you draft Jaden Daniels number two, it's to be a superstar. And yeah, you know, Geno Smith was a second-round pick. I mean, a guy like Jaden Daniels or Drake May is supposed to be a superstar. And you want to take advantage of their cheap contract while you can. They are only, you know, 4 years aren't really cheap. And, you know, the Bengals did it with Joe Burrow. Joe Burrow got to the Super Bowl, I think, in his third year. Jalen Hurts got to a Super Bowl pretty young in his career. So just because a lot of these guys are late bloomers, but these franchises and these coaches don't necessarily have the benefit of time like that. You know, it's a win now league, and there's no reason why the Commanders can't be a playoff team this year and a really competitive team next year if they had a couple of the right pieces. You know, Dan Campbell got the Lions into Super Bowl competitors in 3 years. It can definitely happen quickly.
All right, let's talk about the NFC. Philly or Detroit right now?
Right now, Philly. I don't see a flaw on their roster right now. I mean, their offense is so multifaceted. Jalen Hurts being a thrower and a runner. Saquon Barkley, a dynamic running back and a receiver. Two great receivers on the outside plus a tight end. I mean, Philly, that offense is so dynamic. Kellen Moore is doing a great job. And their defense has just been lights out. So really hard to see any flaws with Philly right now. They're just dominating teams. Whereas with the Lions, gotta love everything that they've accomplished so far. But their defense is really starting to get decimated with injuries. So that's my one concern with the Lions. That just defensively, I just don't know if they're going to be able to hold up through five more games. They got some tough division games coming up in that NFC North, and then obviously through the playoffs. So right now I'm going Eagles, and even if that game had to be played in Detroit in the playoffs, I think I'm still going Eagles.
I'm kind of with you on that one. After those two, who do you think the third best team in the NFC is, and do they have any chance of being in that title game and advancing beyond that?
Good question. I think, yes, there's a chance because I think the other two best teams are the other two NFC North teams. I probably pick the Packers right now just because I think Jordan Love is getting healthy, and that's a team that's just been really mentally, physically tough the last couple of years, really come on strong late in the second half. And I think Jordan Love is just, a surgeon in the pocket. The other team is the Vikings. And, man, I keep waiting for Sam Darnold to turn into a pumpkin, and you've got to be so impressed with him, with head coach Kevin O'Connell, that they've – I mean, they keep winning games. It's remarkable that, like I said, it's not just a hot start anymore for Sam Darnold. He's really putting together a nice season. They keep winning games in the fourth quarter, and Brian Flores' defense is really attacking and aggressive and shutting some teams down. I like the Packers a little bit better because if we're talking about the playoffs, I like the quarterback. I like Jordan Love being able to win a game, especially on the road. Then I still have questions about Sam Darnold, and those questions are going to be there until he does it. I do think the Packers could upset the Lions. But other than that, I think it's looking pretty clear like a Lions-Eagles NFC Championship game. It's going to be appointment viewing. But that NFC North is the best division ever, and those teams are very familiar with each other, and that's where I think a playoff upset could happen.
Yeah, we get a good one Thursday night at Ford Field, Packers, Lions. We were talking about this earlier off of the Sunday night game. The 49ers, I think, are cooked because of the injuries, and that happens. You know, injuries, you know, decimate seasons. We've seen it happen many times in the past. My question to you is their window closed?
It's funny you say that. I have a column in today's Boston Globe where I make that point. I say, yeah, I think it's looking like this is the end for the Niners. You can chalk it up and say they had a bad run of injuries this year, but teams that are old and injury prone, that doesn't get better with age, you know? And you've got Brandon Ayuk now going to be coming off a significant injury. George Kittle's 31, Deebo Samuel's 29, Christian McCaffrey's 28 and had two major injuries this year that are going to basically sideline him for 75% of the season. And now you've got to think about Brock Purdy. He's going to want a new contract this offseason. He's going to want to break the bank. You know, the Niners have had an incredible run with this group. They made four NFC championship games in 5 years. But it does look like it's time to turn the page on them.
So what do they do with Purdy?
I think they're going to have to re-sign him. I mean, I think this year is giving pause as to how elite of a quarterback he is. And I think when his guys are injured, he hasn't been able to really elevate the other guys around him. And the way he played in the cold and the snow the other night in Buffalo, that was not a good sight for Brock Purdy either. But what are you going to do? Like, start over again at quarterback if you're the 49ers? You found a guy who can run your system well. The salaries are what they are for quarterbacks. You got to pay the going rate. And unfortunately, it's probably going to mean that they're going to have to make some tough decisions elsewhere, whether it's George Kittle, Deebo Samuel, Trent Williams, something like that. I mean, they got a lot of old, high-priced guys, and I don't think the Niners are going to be able to just run it back next year. I think this is the end of their run, and they're probably going to be in for, a lean year or two as they figure out the next wave, because that's not a team that really has a ton of young talent that's ready to come up either.
Switching to the AFC with Ben Volen from the Boston Globe. You've got Kansas City, you've got Buffalo, you've got this incredible Pittsburgh story, you still have Baltimore. So how do you see it shaking out here over the last, 4 to 5 weeks of the season?
I mean, the Bills are the clear favorite right now. And to me, no excuses anymore not to get to the Super Bowl. The Chiefs are always going to be the Chiefs, but the Bills, I mean, they're looking, six straight games scoring 30 points on offense. The defense is playing great. They just got Matt Milano back. Yep. They've got, great home field advantage. And that was a good sign, the way that they just completely manhandled the Niners in that snow the other night. Because the last few years, the Bills, for a team that plays in Buffalo, have actually been kind of soft. And they had a playoff game against the Bengals at home 2 years ago. There was snow, and they didn't even show up. And, the weather has actually been kind of working against the Bills the last few years. So to see them dominating an opponent, doing the snow angels, like kind of embracing the whole thing, I think could be a good sign that these Bills are maybe more mentally tough than the last few teams. The Chiefs, you have to always consider the Chiefs when you have Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes, and Steve Spagnuolo calling that defense. I mean, they had no business, I didn't think, being in the Super Bowl last year, and they still, won the whole thing. So I think, obviously, the Chiefs are going to be there at the end. But, looking at it objectively, you have to – You can't love what's going on with their offense right now. They're so desperate for playmakers that they have two guys on the Chiefs that the Patriots released, Juju Smith-Schuster and Tyquan Thornton. It just shows you how desperate the Chiefs are right now. The Steelers are looking very tough. Russell Wilson is my one question, even though he's coming off that big game. I think that was more about the Bengals and how bad they are on defense. When it gets to the playoffs, I have my doubts about Russell Wilson going up against elite defenses, but the Steelers are as tough as any team in the league. And right now I'd probably put them number two ahead of the Chiefs and the Ravens.
Who's your MVP vote right now? It sounds like it's Josh Allen.
No, I'm actually going Saquon Barkley. I think, what he's doing is really special this year. Not to say that what Josh Allen isn't doing isn't also special, but Saquon has just had an unbelievable effect on the Eagles. He's the engine of the best offense in the NFL. His numbers are historic, and they'd be even better if the Eagles didn't steal all his touchdowns with the tush push. Saquon's been amazing. Right now, to me, it's kind of down to Saquon versus Josh Allen, and we'll see who has the better finish. And maybe if Saquon falls off, his pace the last five games, maybe that makes it Josh Allen's award. But right now, I'd give it to the running back. I think Saquon's been a transformational player for the Eagles, and to me, he makes them look like the favorites to win the Super Bowl.
I think there's no chance he doesn't win it if he breaks Dickerson's record. A 40-year-old record. He's on pace to do it based on his average yards per game, to do it by like 18 yards or something like that. If he ends up becoming the all-time single-season rushing leader, I don't know how he doesn't win win the MVP. But then again, Dickerson didn't win it in 84. Marino did.
Right. And that was, frankly, that's pretty justified because Marino
yes, it
had
was.
An incredible year that he had with the 50 touchdowns. So, I agree with you. But I think even if Saquon doesn't break the record, you know, he'll still have the naysayers. Well, he did it in the 17-game season, that kind of thing.
Dickerson broke Simpson's record. Simpson had done it in 14.
Right. Well, right, exactly. But so my point, though, is I don't even think he needs to do that to win the MVP. He just has to kind of maintain his pace and not dramatically fall off and, you know, make sure the Eagles don't go 0-5 here down the stretch. But, you know, with the total yards, with the touchdowns, yards per carry, big plays, the iconic moment, you know, jumping over the defender, Saquon Barkley checks every box for MVP.
Ben, thanks for doing this. Always enjoy the conversation. Hope you're well.
All right. Thanks a lot, Kevin.
Yep. Ben Volin, everybody, at Ben, VOLIN, on X on Twitter. All right. I want to come back to something that Denton and I were talking about at the end of last hour. The college football overtime rules and what we saw Friday night if you stayed up to watch Georgia Tech, Georgia. 8 overtimes, the last 6 of which were 2-point conversion plays. Took 45 minutes to finish. I hate it. I'm not sure what you think, but I've got a suggestion for a fix. If you want to weigh in, 301-230-0980, 301-230-0980. Do you like the college football overtime rule or not? And if not, how would you change it? Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com.
Blinds.com Cyber Monday sales event is happening now. Get some of the best deals of the season with up to 50% off site-wide, plus a free professional measure. Avoid the home renovation overwhelm. Swapping out old blinds for custom window coverings delivers big results, and Blinds.com makes it easy and affordable. Skip the long lines or waiting around at home all day just to get a quote. With Blinds.com, shopping online doesn't mean sacrificing quality, style, or service. A Blinds.com design expert can help you make the perfect selection. We can even handle everything from measure to install. Get your whole home installed for one low cost. With over 25 million windows covered, Blinds.com is the number one online retailer of custom window coverings. Shop Blinds.com Cyber Monday sales event today for some of the best deals of the season. Save up to 50% site-wide, plus premium doorbusters and a free professional measure. Up to 50% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
It's better over here. AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Struggling with mental health shouldn't be the norm. At Mindful Therapy Group, we specialize in connecting you with compassionate therapists to find the perfect fit for you. Mindful Therapy Group accepts most health insurances. Visit mindfultherapygroup.com to start your mental health journey today.
Hey guys, it's Jim Costa from Cash the Ticket. If you're planning on betting college football bowl games, good luck. No, seriously, it's never been harder. And you don't want to be hurting your bankroll. You want to make sure you're doing your homework. Listen to Cash the Ticket. Mike Valeni and I will be breaking down every single bowl game, dropping new episodes nearly every day throughout college football's postseason. Spicing things up with a 12-team playoff. Can't wait to see some of those teams from the South come up north for the snow. Be sure to subscribe to Cash the Ticket on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
So on Friday night, Thanksgiving weekend, this past Friday night, Georgia played Georgia Tech. It was a massive game for Georgia. A loss would have been a big hit for them, potentially, in their playoff hopes. A win was definitely going to clinch whether they beat Texas in the SEC championship game or not. And they played Georgia Tech in Athens. And Georgia Tech's been pretty good this year. They're the team that first knocked off Miami. They've got a really good quarterback. They're well coached. And they were in this game. I mean, Georgia, am I right, Denton? Were you watching this or were you on the air? They could not stop stop Haynes King and that rushing attempt. Georgia Tech rushed for, I think, close to 300 yards against Georgia's defense. They could not get off the field in this game.
Yeah, it was great.
I'm looking to see how many yards they had against Georgia, because I'm going to guess
it
was
260 rushing yards.
563 total, 260 on the ground against that Georgia defense. Anyway, Georgia came back. They were down in this game. They were down two scores in the fourth quarter, down 27-13. They came back, and there was a turnover, and they ended up tying the game and forcing overtime. Now, for those of you who don't know the college football overtime rule, it used to be, you know, everybody starts at the 25-yard line. You know, you flip a coin. Typically, if you win the toss, you go on defense first, so you know what you need when you get the ball. Each team gets a possession starting at the 25, the opponent's 25, and you play football from that point forward. There isn't a clock, and you don't have, you know, you do have a kicking game, not necessarily a punting game, because you're never going to be backed up far enough where you have to punt necessarily, and you wouldn't anyway. You'd throw, you know, a Hail Mary. And you do that until it used to be you would play that way until you had a winner. And the old rule also went to two-point conversions. When you scored, you had to go for two starting in actually the third overtime. It's now the second overtime. They changed that rule to what it is today after a very famous game in 2018. Texas A&M and LSU went to seven overtimes before A&M prevailed 74-72. The game lasted nearly 6 hours, and there's a lot of risk. The players were exhausted. There were, you know, they were more injury prone, and college football said, we can't allow this again. It's too much risk to the players. It's, you know, basically they're shot for the next several days. And they moved to a rule in which after the second overtime, first overtime you play 25-yard line, 25-yard line, and you can either kick or go for two. Second overtime, you've got to go for two if you score. Third overtime, it becomes one play each team. It's a two-point conversion from the three-yard line. In 2021, Illinois and Penn State played the longest game overtime-wise in college football history. They played nine overtimes, with Illinois finally prevailing. Nobody could make two-point conversions. Finally prevailing 20-18 over Penn State. That was in Happy Valley. And then the second longest college game of all time was Friday night's game between Georgia and Georgia Tech. Game went to overtime. Went to overtime at 27 apiece. Each team scored in the first overtime, kicked an extra point. So it was 34-34. The second overtime, each team scored, went for two and missed. And so then you got, it was 40-40 going into... actually, did they both make it? I forget. Did they both make the two-point conversions and it was 42-42? Yes. That's what happened. So it was 42. They both made the two-point conversions in the second overtime. It was 42-42. From that point forward, they then played a third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth overtime periods. Six overtime periods where each team got one play from the three-yard line for 2 points. In those six overtime periods, each team having a shot, 12 opportunities, there were three made two-point plays. Georgia making the final one to win the game 44-42. Actually, yeah, that's how it worked. 44-42. I think they both missed the two-point conversion in the second overtime, and it went to overtime at 40-40. Georgia made two conversions. Georgia Tech made one. There were three total made. The overtime overall lasted 48 minutes to see three made conversions. I'm just going to tell you right now that There is a difference of opinion on this in terms of the polling on college football overtime. Some people loved it. Some people don't love it. If the national championship game is decided by penalty kicks, by two-point conversion plays, it'll be the last year we ever see it. If we see a major playoff game decided this way, it's over. Because this is as gimmicky as it gets. This is not real football. One play. From the three-yard line, a two-point conversion play. You could argue that starting at the 25-yard line isn't real football because you've taken the clock and a lot of special teams plays out of it. But my opinion is, and I've said this going back to the first time I saw it, this is gimmicky, it's not football, and it would be a terrible way to decide a very important game. Not to mention, to me, watching it, it wasn't thrilling. It got very tedious. The dumbest thing they do in this long exercise of two-point plays is that they switch ends of the field. So you get like 5-6 minutes of walking down to the other end of the field. These guys are exhausted already. I hate it. I would go back to the old rule, but I would cut it off after three overtimes, the game ends in a tie. Or I would go to the NFL overtime rule. 10 minutes, because the NFL cut it from 15 to 10, and I would go with the NFL rule, period. I've always been a bigger fan of the NFL overtime versus the college overtime because I felt even starting at the 25, it was a bit gimmicky. But two-point plays in six straight overtimes that took 49 minutes and we only had three made conversions is a dumb way, in my opinion, to determine the winner of a football game. You know, it is penalty kickish, and I don't think we should be copying soccer. It is the comparison to going to some sort of three-point shoot-off in an NBA game that goes past three overtimes to decide that. I found it to be boring, tedious, and dumb. And if a major playoff game, or God forbid the national championship game, gets decided this way, I think that would absolutely prompt the changing of this rule back to something, you know, equating to what they used to have. You say what, Denton?
We're on completely opposite sides. I, for one, am stunned that you just offered a tie as a real possibility in
college
football. Ties are
gross. Don't want it. I'd prefer the NFL rule.
I don't like the NFL rule. I love college overtime. I think they should wait a little bit longer until they do the two-point conversion thing. I think it should be after the fourth overtime where you start to do the two-point thing. But I don't really mind it. I actually kind of like the gimmicky atmosphere of it because it does force you to be creative and it forces you to have plays up your sleeve that are a little bit better in short yardage situations. I was stunned, by the way, that Georgia Tech did not run the ball. They started dropping Haynes King back to throw it, which
I agree.
I thought that was an
totally
awful decision making.
I don't have. They should have run him on that on zone reads over and over again.
Over and over again until they stop it. And if they did stop it, well, guess what? You went to eight overtimes anyway. I didn't like the way they handled that. But as far as the gimmicky nature of this, I would prefer not to see it in a national championship. We're in agreement there. But in a regular season game, even though it cost me to stay up for like 2 hours later than I wanted to because I had to do a show after this, I loved every single bit of it. I just want craziness. One of my favorite things about college football is that it gets crazy. And this, you know, two-point conversion style of thing, I think it influences and is pro-crazy. So I like it. I don't love it, but I do like it. And I'm glad that we have seen games go into eight overtimes. I think it's fun.
I think it's way too fluky to decide games. I think, you know, whomever can, you know, deliver on their 12th best two-point play at the end of, you know, 49 minutes worth of tediousness is just not in the spirit of what they played for 60 minutes and even the first two overtimes. I hate that. Now, what if I offered this to you and just said, go back to the old rule? Because the A&M LSU thing was a very, very rare, extreme case.
I would take that. That is my favorite style of overtime. From the 25, and you have the full playbook available, because one of the things I don't like about the two or the three, you don't really have your full playbook available, but from the 25, you do. So I like going back from the 25. There are obviously adjustments I would make to the current way. I'm with you. The switching ends of the field is so ridiculous. I also don't love that you give a coach timeout every single time. I mean, Kirby Smart was pimping those timeouts.
I was like,
buddy, can we chill? Like, can you just not be doing this? It was so, I mean, he used like six timeouts in 45 minutes. It was absurd. I would take timeouts away, but if it's go to the NFL rule or go to the 25, I'll go to the 25. Because the 25, to me, that is what college football overtime is in my mind. I was, how old was I? I was probably like 15, 16 years old with that LSU A&M game that you're talking about, and I stayed up for every single bit of it. I'm young, I'm sorry. But I loved it. I mean, that was awesome. That, like, I loved that, but I like this too. And I love this significantly more than I like the NFL overtime. I think the NFL overtime sucks. I think they do it for television, whereas in college football, you're not handcuffed by television rights, and certain markets have to get certain games at certain times.
Yeah, I think there's a big difference between the college format and the NFL format. The NFL format is football. You're playing football the way you played the first 60 minutes. In college football, once you move to an extra period, it is kind of not full football. You're deciding it on essentially red zone football without, you know, having special teams as a part of it. Field position is a part of it. That's the number one reason I've never liked the college rule. And I understand that a lot of people love it. And I certainly like the old college rule better than this. This, to me, is the ultimate in gimmickry. I mean, I watched that Illinois-Penn State game from a few years ago. It was absurd. And it's way too long, and I don't know that it's safer. Here's something that a friend of mine just sent to me. It looks like Nicole Auerbach wrote this. Who is she?
She works at NBC. She also works at SiriusXM.
And she's a college football person, right?
Yes. Yeah, she's great.
She wrote, I understand why the sports leaders felt that they needed to change the overtime format after the grueling, seven overtime LSU Texas A&M game in 2018. They were worried about the wear and tear of all of those additional plays. But now, 6 years later, I'm convinced that it was unnecessary. It was an unnecessary overreaction to an extremely rare event, which is what I just said to you. Why not go back? She writes, there's no good reason for teams to alternate two-point plays beginning with the third overtime except to end the game based on whomever can execute their seventh best two-point play. There are other better... It sounds like she's about to agree with me. There are other better ways to structure overtime that allow the game to be decided by normal football plays. Amen to that. Copy the NFL! I would do that. Or keep the format that college football uses for the first two overtimes. And how about this? Move the line of scrimmage up to the 15 or the 10-yard line for later overtime periods. So there would be fewer possible first downs, subsequently additional plays. I just want the game to end with a real possession and a concerted strategy, not random two-point plays run after the players walk back and forth across the field. It's anticlimactic. Yes, it is. It's awkward. And I'd honestly rather a game end in a tie than with this crazy format deciding a meaningful regular season contest. I like it. I like everything she said. The idea of moving it up for subsequent overtimes to the 15 and then to the 10, I like that a lot better than 1 2-point play. It's not a bad option.
No,
they got to fix this.
I like what she offered there with the 10-yard line, because then you're getting, like, I want to see a much fuller playbook where there is a little bit of space, because you're so congested at the 3-yard line. You can't get into real route combinations and route trees.
No.
But I still think the NFL overtime.
When
sucks.
She writes it's anticlimactic, it's awkward. That's exactly how I feel when I watch this. I think it's very anticlimactic. I think it becomes tedious as it goes on. And it's just, you know, you added something. Kirby's calling timeouts every, you know, Georgia Tech attempt. It just got to the point where it was like dragging on. And I don't want to see a meaningful, like a playoff game decided this way. I don't.
I do want to make one quick amendment. I was not 15 when that game, I thought that game was in like 2012. I was like 22.
Okay, great.
Yeah, so I'm a little older.
Great, so you're 27. Brian in Tacoma Park, what do you say?
Well, that's how you know you're either big time or older. When you say Denton, who is she? I think philosophically, I agree with you. You play a certain way for the entire game, and then they say, now you need to play this way. As a general matter, I prefer that the rules be more consistent with the pros. I don't like one foot in bounds, because in any other sport, you have one foot out of bounds, you are by definition out of bounds. So I think that the rules should be more consistent with the pros. If it's a tie, it's a tie, but it's confusing for the viewer at a certain point, because even if
you're
you know the rules, you still have to figure out what's happening now. You get excited because you think maybe your team is about to, oh no, wait, they have to do this now. And even if the announcers are helping you, you still lose track of what's going on.
Brian, that's a great point. I lost track. I lost track as to whether or not Georgia Tech was running the second of the two-point plays in that particular overtime period. And the only thing that helped is they put the graphic up that says if they convert, they win. But, yeah, it was hard to keep track of it. I agree.
On the eighth overtime. Yeah, you don't. You, and announcers are shot too. You know.
Yeah. The whole.
And by the way, off topic. Yeah. But did you? I don't know if you heard the call last night, but I feel like I know you a little bit. I feel like this would annoy you. Did you hear when Buck said?
Yeah, we played it earlier
for Coach of the Year. You, okay. And he
said, I actually didn't hear it. Denton played it for me earlier. You know, I mean, Joe Buck's pretty sharp. He lost track of where he was. But, of course, Jaden Daniels is a rookie that Dan Quinn is coaching, for sure. Thanks. Appreciate it. Got one more thing for you when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980. There's a big story that Courtney Cronin, we've had Courtney on the show before, she covers the Bears. She's the John Keim equivalent for ESPN on the Eberflus firing the day after Thanksgiving, after they completely... you know, went brain dead over the final 32 seconds in their game at Detroit. It's truly one of the worst coaching, quarterback, clock management gaffes of all time. 32 seconds left, down three, and they took a timeout with them into the locker room and onto the team plane. Basically, one of the reasons he got fired is there's a lot of stuff in here about how he had just lost the trust of the locker room, and that the decision, by the way, to call timeouts was his, but there was also a communication system with people in the booth, and one anonymous source said the system for that was broken. But in this story, the interesting thing to me is what's written about Cliff Kingsbury. Courtney Cronin says two team sources tell ESPN that Thomas Brown, the current offensive coordinator, will be considered among the candidates in January as Chicago begins its coaching search. Other names the Bears hope to interview include Lions offensive coordinator Ben Johnson and Washington offensive coordinator Cliff Kingsbury, the latter of whom interviewed for Chicago's OC opening before the team hired Shane Waldron to be the OC. I know that this is not the first time Cliff's name has been attached to a potential Chicago opening because of Caleb, but there you go. It's kind of official with Courtney reporting it that they intend, I think, after the season to interview Cliff to be a head coach. Ben Johnson, Cliff Kingsbury. I think Ben Johnson is going to have a lot of choices, and I think it's going to be really interesting if those guys interview and pass, what it would say about Caleb Williams. Back tomorrow, everybody.